fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the February 10th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. A Cameroonian golf champion who lost his legs and most of his fingers to meningitis in 2018 now has his sights set on winning a gold medal at this year's Paralympics in Tokyo. In this report by Ann Zwanka in Yaounde, Moki Edwin Kinzika tells us more.
As a child, 30-year-old Issa Nalep Amang liked to play at his neighborhood golf course. He quickly went from being a ball boy to a caddy, and then from playing golf to becoming a champion of Cameroon and West Africa. Amang was the first African to gain entry to the ALPS Tour, a non-profit by Austria, France, Italy, and Switzerland to improve young golf professionals' tournament skills. But during a 2018 tournament in Egypt, Amang caught meningitis, an inflammation of brain and spinal cord membranes. He went into a coma and, suffering from septic shock, had to have most of his fingers and both legs amputated.
Ça a été très compliqué d'avoir les prothèses, d'être debout.
Despite the traumatic loss, Amang says he has never given up. He says it was very complicated to have prosthetics and to be standing, he says. But it was possible because people put their hands together, says Amang. They have contributed. Amang got prosthetic limbs thanks to golf federations and other donors and was able to get back on the golf course. Pharmacist Ude Bahoenui was one of Amang's donors. She says when Amang was sick, she had her doubts. But as the golfer was abroad, says Bahoenui, he was sending photos to her, showing his training. She says little by little, she became confident that Amang was going to make it through. Amang did recover and became the only disabled professional golfer in West Africa.
On ne peut pas dire que c'est un sentiment. C'est une vie que je reprends.
He says what he is feeling. He can't say it's a feeling. It's a life he is taking back. Playing golf is a sport of his life, says Amang, and the feeling floods him because he has no way out except to play golf. Amang's willpower to keep playing was lauded by Cameroon's main disabled association, Handy Plus. But the group says more state support is needed for all those with reduced mobility, many of whom are forced to live behind closed doors due to lack of help and stigma. Honoré Essengue is president of Handy Plus.
Il a eu la chance d'avoir une solidarité par rapport à ses amis.
He says Amang was fortunate to receive solidarity from his friends. Those who have no friends, what are they going to do? Ask Essengue. He says at some point, the state will have to take responsibility for the disabled. As for Amang, he is training for upcoming competitions with the aim of winning Cameroon a gold medal at the next Paralympic Games. For Ann Zwanke in Yaounde, Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News.
Hi, this is Tatiana McFadden, 17-time Paralympic medalist, 7-time gold medalist, 17-time marathon champion, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on Voice of America.
Now let's go to Lagos, where a one-week youth basketball clinic recently was held. To find out more, Iron Mike Mbonye contacted the clinic's coordinator, who is the assistant coach of Nigeria's national women's basketball team, Peter Amedu.
The 9th edition of the Warriors Basketball Classic, but this year, 2021, was a different one, was a unique one. What we did this year, we started with the basketball clinic for children from the age of 6 to age of 15. We taught them the rudiments, the principles, and the fundamentals of the game, which is the key area whereby kids should start from. And we have a total of about 75 kids, even though the other ones are coming in 2 days later. So it was a great experience in terms of on the camp. And the children came from all over Lagos. Some even came in from Songota. So it's a big plus, and we wish that the program will continue. When we finish the clinic for the kids, we also double into coaching clinic. We start by acknowledging each and every one of the coaches who has been contributing in one way or the other from the grassroots basketball all over Nigeria, because we have coaches from Osun, Ekiti, Ogun, and mostly from Lagos. So it was an avenue for me to be able to bring my expertise, my idea into the table for us to share. And we talked basically on the ethic and principles of coaching. And I tell you, the response was high. We have about 26 coaches and that turn up. And when that is done, we'll be able to give out certificates for such, which to encourage them and to know that it is not only about gathering kids and teaching them by not knowing the right thing. So that is what we have done. And I'm very grateful to what we have done so far and the response.
What was the response to the clinic? How many teams participated?
It was a great one because after the clinic for the kids, we doubled into coaching clinic for the coaches. And in the Lukuju basketball tournament, which is tagged this year, all academy games, it was a great one. We have the under 15, 12 teams, which was a missed one. We decided to mix the male and the female to make up a team this time, because that is the stage whereby most of these kids play together. So we have about 12 teams, and we have the under 18, which basically only on boys. We have another 13 teams from the under 18. Then we also extended it to the elite, which is we have 6 female team and also 6 male team. So that was a big bomber package for us, and that was why we extended the program for 6 days. We started games, and it wasn't easy, but I tell you, the response was high, the intensity of the game was high, and we got all the best hands of referees from Lagos State and probably from other part of the state to be part of what we're doing. And I tell you, it was a great one, and the joy is there. But we are hoping in the subsequent one, which will come up after the Olympic, which is going to be by August, will be a different ball game.
Did you discover new talents? Is the clinic going to be a continuous exercise?
New talents we discover, really talent. When I mean talent, wrong talent we discover from the clinic and even to the championship. Because most of the kids that we saw here, some of them have not played even in Division 1 or Division 2. They are just upcoming players. So with all I saw, it was a great one. And from this tournament, we were able to pick 12 players, 12 girls, 12 boys that will be going to the elite camp in Abuja for the AAU, because we are preparing towards that area whereby schools in the US are inviting us. The organizer of AAU have invited us to present a team, and which is going to be good for Nigerian basketball, and which is also going to be good for our young adults coming up in basketball. So it is a great, good relationship that we are creating with a lot of countries. We also got an invitation to Europe, but we are hoping that at the time the pandemic is slowed down, and we should be able to make the arrangement. It might not be this year, but hopefully by next year, we should be able to do the needful. Because our aim right now is to partner with the Nigerian Basketball Federation to take basketball to the greatest height in terms of academic games. And the Warriors Basketball Academy has initiated it. I hope and I believe that the next edition will be a great one. And I want to thank all the key teams that have come from far and near, and especially the coaches, for their commitment and for their effort. And when that is done, then we should be able to say that the basketball has not just only come to stay, but we have come to grow the game. And that is the key point. The joy today, you could see that most of the young kids are the ones that have been drafted into the NBA. We have Precious Achiuwa, who started like every other kid from here, and today he's playing NBA. And so we are hoping that if this academic game comes to stay, we'll be having a lot of Precious Achiuwa drafted to big team club in America and also all over part of the world. I want to thank the Nigerian Basketball Federation for the opportunity given to us. I want to thank the Lagos State Basketball Association for a job well done. They have been with us from the beginning to the end, and especially to the Dodan Warriors, which the Warriors Academy was formed out of. The person of Sam Amedu, Colonel Sam Amedu, retired, but he has never been tired, even wherever he is, communication, trying to make proper arrangements so that the championship will be successful.
That's Peter Amadou, the coordinator of a recent youth basketball clinic in Lagos. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Lagos, Nigeria.
My name is Coach Peter Favour Amadou. I'm the assistant coach of the female national team, the Tigres. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Hi, this is Press Conference USA guest host Kim Lewis. Join me and VOA senior TV correspondent Chris Simpkins as we discuss the great migration of African Americans with author and historian Jesse Holland. We'll discuss how it shaped the political, social, and cultural landscape of America. Listen this Saturday and Sunday on Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.
It's time to climb between the ropes once again with our reigning prince of pugilistics, Nnamdi Hollywood Moeta. Sporty greetings, Nnamdi.
Greetings, Sonny.
Nnamdi, the boxing world mourning the death of Leon Spinks, who died on February 5th at the age of 67. He had been battling prostate cancer. Spinks, the architect of one of boxing's greatest upsets almost 43 years ago, Nnamdi, on February 15th, 1978, Spinks upset Muhammad Ali to claim the World Heavyweight Championship. Looking back on that fight, Nnamdi, it was only the eighth professional fight for Leon Spinks. Why would Ali take on someone so inexperienced?
Remember, Muhammad Ali had a very tough, rough fight with Ken Norton, the heavyweight out of Los Angeles. I remember what Ali said, that he really got banged up. So in order for Ali not to fight Ken Norton in a rematch, which the fans wanted because the first fight was close, Ali had to go with Leon Spinks. And Ali was not in his best shape. If you remember, he came in doing the rope-a-dope, expected Leon Spinks to really fade out, you know. And looking back at Leon Spinks' style, I've always loved his straight-ahead fighting style on top of you. Never gives you the chance to really set up. So Ali was there on the rope waiting for Leon Spinks to tire out, and Leon never did. And Leon came into this fight as the underdog and ended up picking up the heavyweight title of the world.
Leon Spinks would hold on to that world heavyweight title for 7 months before losing the rematch to Muhammad Ali. Leon Spinks retired with a record of 26 wins, 17 losses, and 3 draws. Nnamdi, should Leon Spinks have retired in the mid-1980s?
Sonny, he should have retired after he made the money in the mid-80s. Because if you remember, with that money at that time, we have all the movers and shakers, con men. And his life was really just all the fights after the Muhammad Ali fights were all damaged fights. Even the cruiserweight fight with Duat Kawi and all the other fights, he took a lot of beating and he was just not the same. And his life was not the same. But I've always felt he was also rushed, because if you look at his brother, Michael Spinks, Michael was really built in the right way and was allowed to really dominate the light heavyweight and the heavyweight division. I felt Leon Spinks was rushed, really.
How do you think Leon Spinks will be remembered by boxing fans?
Well, a lot of people, comedians, will remember him with a Dracula smile, you know. I would like to remember him for his service to the nation. Remember, he was in the U.S. Marine, and to be a Marine is not easy, you know. And he came along when they were big heavyweights. I mean, if you really look at Leon Spinks was more like a cruiserweight, not your big heavyweight like your George Foreman, Ken Norton, Muhammad Ali, or any Shavers. These guys were big guys. So Leon didn't really stand a good chance to do anything with those big guys. So he dropped down to the cruiserweight and he still didn't make an impact. But like I said, you know, Nobody's perfect. Rest in peace, Leon Spinks. And we will remember you as a gold medalist in the 1976 Summer Games.
Namdi, I remember watching the Olympic boxing competition back in 1976 in Montreal. Just a tremendous USA team. Look back on that squad for our VOA boxing fans.
When you look at the 1976 team, you have Howard Davis, Leo Randolph, Sugar Ray Leonard, Michael Spinks, Leon Spinks. All these guys were gold medalists. Then you throw in the heavyweight, John Tate, that picked up the bronze, who also went ahead and became a world champion. The second team, the 1984 team, because people consider these two teams the two greatest boxing team in the U.S. boxing history. When you look at the 84 teams too, you have your Paul Gonzalez, Parnell Whitaker, Meldrick Taylor, Mark Brilliant, Steve McCrory. All these were gold medalists. After these two teams, everything that came after these two teams have never been the same. So it's fair to say the 1976 and 1984 U.S. Olympic boxing teams were the greatest two teams. And then hopefully, as we go into Tokyo, Japan, for the Summer Games, we will see some new young stars rise. But the 76 and 84 teams, for me, those are the greatest teams.
In 2021, many boxing fans, Namdi, hoping to see Anthony Joshua go against Tyson Fury in a world heavyweight title unification bout. Last time we chatted, Namdi, I remember there was a sticking point regarding the WBO belt and whether it would be at stake with AJ Fury. Where do we stand now with that WBO belt?
Sonny, the WBO have decided to allow Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua to continue with the fight and then defend the belt. Well, the WBO decided also to appoint Alexander Usyk from Ukraine and Joe Joyce from the UK to fight for the interim belt. The winner of Anthony Joshua, Tyson Fury, must fight the winner of Joe Joyce and Alexander Usyk in 180 days. So that clears the road for the all-British showdown. Four belts online. This has never happened before. And fight fans are all happy because this will be for the whole Grand Puba, which means the winner of that fight is the baddest man on the planet.
The coronavirus pandemic, still a big problem on this planet. And it seems like such a health risk, Namdi, to pack up to 100,000 boxing fans into a venue like Wembley Stadium in London. Where do you think AJ Fury will take place?
Sonny, the all-British showdown with four belts will not happen in the UK. Like you said, COVID is not going to allow that to happen. But check this, Sonny. They have gotten sweet offers from Saudi Arabia, Dubai, Qatar, Singapore. The biggest money will take the fight. And then it's a good chance this fight is not even going to come close to our shores here in America, you know. Because we're talking about big, big fight gates, you know. I mean, Saudi Arabia is big money. Dubai is big money. Abu Dhabi is big money. Singapore, Australia, they're all huge, huge money. So expect this fight to happen outside Europe, outside the UK.
Namdi, how will the money be divided between the AJ and Fury camps?
Talking about the splits, the fight is projected to bring in more than £200 million, Sonny. We're talking pounds now. We're not talking dollars, because if you're talking dollars, it's going to be more. So, which means these two cats can walk away with close to £100 million per bout. The first fight is a 50-50 split. The second fight, the winner will go with 60 and the loser will go with 40. So 60-40 for the rematch. The first one is 50-50 split down the middle. And I'm not talking about a little change here. The Battle of Britain is going to bring huge, huge money.
Namdi, when will there be an official announcement for the Battle of Britain?
Sonny, expect official announcement end of February. We are looking at June or July. But just few details to be worked out, like who will have their name first on the poster. Is that going to be Fury Joshua or Joshua Fury? Who goes into the ring first? Who will weigh in first? How do you resolve all this? Because these are very important matters that must be cleared before the fight night. They will have to have what we call a coin toss to resolve these issues. And it comes down to who is the biggest global draw. The biggest global draw in this fight, hands down, is AJ Anthony Joshua. So expect something at the end of February officially, and then we project into late June, early July for the showdown, for the mega fight.
Thanks, Namdi. That's Namdi Hollywood Moeta, our reigning prince of pugilistics. In African athletics, let's give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to Ethiopia's Gudaf Segay, who smashed the women's world indoor 1500-meter record by more than 2 seconds Tuesday evening in France. She clocked 3 minutes and 53.09 seconds to break the world indoor mark previously held by Ethiopian countrywoman Genzeba Dibaba. Gudaf Segay is 24 years old, and she won a bronze medal at the 2019 World Championships in the 1500 meters event. Meanwhile, at that same indoor meet in France, another Ethiopian, Getnet Wale, won the men's 3,000 meters race in 7 minutes and 24.98 seconds. That's the second fastest indoor time ever.
I'm Kendra Harrison. I'm the 100 hurdle world record holder for Team USA, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Turning to tennis, local favorite Nick Kyrgios overcame a scary mental mindset to win his match Wednesday, day three of the Australian Open. Craig Gabriel reports from Melbourne.
Nick Kyrgios said there were demons in his head as he battled 22-year-old Hugo Humbert, who served for the match at 5-3 in the fourth set, especially when the Frenchman had two match points. As Kyrgios said, you don't want to know what's going on in there. And when he was losing, he started wondering how much grief he would be getting. But then the crowd got more involved, and Kyrgios clawed back as some of his shot-making reached new heights. It was high entertainment. Eventually, the match turned, and the Australian closed it out, winning 5-7, 6-4, 3-6, 7-6, 6-4 in 3 hours, 25 minutes. Next for him is last year's finalist and the US Open champion, Dominic Thiem. Simona Halep was also nearly shown the door as Ilya Tomljanovic, who trains at the Chris Evert Academy in Florida, survived an early service break to win the first set and then led 5-2 in the third. She just couldn't close it out. Halep charging back to win 4-6, 6-4, 7-5.
Definitely, it was an amazing match. She played unbelievable, but I fought till the end. I never gave up during the match, and that's why maybe I could win in the end. But honestly, I'm really happy and proud of what I did today on court for the fighting that I did.
Serena Williams swept to an easy win. Naomi Osaka and Alexander Zverev advanced in straight sets. And Novak Djokovic accounted for Francis Tiafoe in four sets. But it was not an outstanding performance. Iga Swiatek, the new French Open champion, and Garbine Muguruza also had wins on a pretty hot Melbourne summer's day. Craig Gabriel, VOA Sports, Melbourne.
Thanks, Craig. Still in Australia, rope free falling off a cliff has become one of the latest passions for adventurous athletes down under. Joining us with more details is VOA's Gwen Ooten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sunny. On any given sunny afternoon in New South Wales, Australia, you're bound to run into a dozen friends who have united in a shared passion for an activity that's not for the faint of heart. There you will witness the proclaimed Aussie adventure sport enthusiasts free flying, a kind of bungee jumping, rope swinging hybrid, but with much longer free falls. On this day, 24-year-old Daisy Allen has gathered with her rope jumping mates atop a cliff nearly 200 feet above the ocean. And she tells Reuters the key to jumping from such dizzying heights is to focus on the breath.
Definitely at the beginning, there's a lot of fear that comes up, like you're amygdala, your survival brain is really kicking in because you really, every part of you is trying to rationalize the safety aspect, because obviously you only jump because you know it's safe, right? So for me, it's a matter of just calming down, centering myself, really focusing in on my breathing, which is an aspect of this that I really love because it really forces me into that state of mindfulness and pure awareness.
Allen's partner, Tom Oliver, says it's that state of awareness that stops the mental chatter before taking a leap of faith.
There's two conversations going on in your head. One's trying to talk you out of it, and the other one's trying to talk you into it. And you start listening more to the one that's trying to talk you into it and less to the one that's talking you out of it. And for me, not overthinking it. So just having full faith in everything. And then, yeah, having someone double check you as well, having your buddies there to make sure you are safe. And then once the rope's just in your hands, you just have to make the decision to step off. That's often the hardest part.
Free flying or rope jumping originated in the 90s and has gained popularity over the past decade. To perform it, jumpers strap themselves to a harness with a rope that's attached to another line strung between two cliffs on either side. After achieving mindfulness and calming the nerves, they step off the edge and enjoy a free fall towards the ocean's surface before rope tension thankfully pulls them back. The rope then grows taut, and after some moments of swinging back and forth over the sea, half a dozen friends at the top work in unison to pull the jumper back up the cliff and onto solid ground. And Tom Oliver says the people are the most important part of the adventure.
It's mostly about the people, because I can go to a beautiful place so easily alone, but the people make the big difference for me and who's involved. It's like an informal tribe, and there's so much trust and faith put in each other, and you're both going, everyone's going through hardship in some way, and sharing that, it's just special. I don't know, can't put any more words to that.
In Daisy Allen's own words, free flying is the equivalent of overcoming fear.
For me, it's a process. I went from being really afraid and taking these first jumps off and exposures to heights and just desensitizing myself and just training my neural pathways that my survival brain is actually limiting me from being able to experience really amazing things.
Daring sports enthusiasts are certainly doing really amazing things in Australia. I'll hand it back over to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Ooten. And that wraps up the February 10th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.